welcome to episode 36 of the DFA podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grosnick, and joining me today, we've got a little bit of a break from your usual RJ Anderson co-hosting. Joining me today is the newest member of the regular Baseball Prospectus transaction analysis team, Ben Diamond. Ben, how's it going, man?
It's great. Happy to be here.
Cool, cool. So just to let our listeners know, for the last year or so, I've been carrying a lot of the load, certainly not all the load for transaction analysis at Baseball Prospectus. And fortunately for me and fortunately for our readers, Ben's coming on to help out, do a lot of the transaction analysis that you'll be seeing on the site. He's a great writer. And Ben, do you want to just share a little bit for listeners who may not have heard you on the show before about where you've written in the past and what you've done in addition to your work at BP?
Yeah, sure. I'm really excited about taking on that role as well. That's one of my favorite kinds of writing. Open to lots of weird little things. So looking forward to that. I'm an editor over at the Dynasty Guru, so I'm decent for some fantasy stuff as well. And I spent a lot of time in the past writing about the Yankees specifically at BP Bronson and Pinstripe Alley.
So writing about the Yankees recently has been a lot more fun than might have been a year or two ago. That's kind of a fun thing. You know, you got to see them kind of unexpectedly go to the ALCS this year. I'm sure it hurt when they got knocked out of things, but no, it looks like you're ready for another golden age in Yankees baseball, so that could be kind of fun, right?
Yeah, usually I'm a bit of a doom and gloom fan about that kind of thing, but no, this year, I mean, they got knocked out, and it's hard not to just look at that as a positive thing. The fact that they even made it there, especially as everyone says in a rebuilding year, pretty amazing. So, yeah, a little bit not too thrilled about Girardi being not really fired, but dismissed, but I am looking forward to next year.
So before we get into our real topic for the week, which we'll get into in a second, we'll jump into a move that the Yankees made or sort of like had made for them. The Masahiro Tanaka opting into his contract. I'm really surprised this actually happened. I'm working on the top 50 free agents list for BP. I was really comfortable penciling Tanaka in like the top five, but he ended up opting into his contract with the Yankees. He's going to be sticking around for three more years. That's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty surprised, too. I was pretty positive that either he was going to go to free agency or he was going to sign an extension with the Yankees. But he's going to go with 3 years, about $22 million for the next 3 years until 2020. I'm sure he has his reasons for sticking with them. I mean, obviously, when you're coming from a foreign country, it always is a little bit easy to stay in a place, you know, just because of the adjustment. But I think more so than that, I think he probably just likes the direction the Yankees are going. And he might not think that he can get that average annual value for the next 3 years the way he's going to get it with the Yankees. But still, it's a little bit of a surprising move. Great for the Yankees. They're really lucky there. And, they're probably not going to have to pursue a free agent like Darvish or Arrieta now.
Which is great for them. I really expected Tanaka would go out in the free market and get, like, over $100 million, whether that's for, you know, 5 years or a 6 year deal or something like that. But it is kind of good for him because he will be hitting the free agent market again. And, you know, theoretically his arm doesn't blow out or something like that. In 3 years, he can still get another good size contract at the end of this. So it's not like he's giving up the world to stick with the Yankees, but you know, if he wanted to go pitch for a contender, I mean, how many better options really were there have been other than like the rising Yankees, which should be good for the next 3 years versus, I don't know, I'm sure he could have gotten a deal with the Dodgers or the Cubs or something, but I mean, that's as good of a place to be, like you said, as anywhere else, I'd assume.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the thing that people also forget, he's only 29 now. This is going to be his age 29 season. He came over when he was 25. So, I mean, he'll hit the free agent market at 32 and he'll still be set up for another solid 4 or 5 year deal as long as he stays alive. Those aren't those. Yeah.
So Tanaka, Severino, Gray, do you think the Yankees go out and try to look for another starting pitching piece, or do you think they'll maybe stick with the guys that they have in the org, like, you know, Jordan Montgomery or some of the other guys they've already got on hand?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I think for sure, as you mentioned, you're going to see Severino, Gray, Tanaka at the top. And then I think it's going to be pretty hard for them not to put Montgomery in there too, which brings up the back of the rotation. I think Sabathia is always like a decent candidate for another 1 year deal, just as depth, which would be pretty interesting. I'm not sure if that actually will happen. They also have top prospect Chance Adams, who they said they made pretty clear they wouldn't call up last year, but
right.
pretty much as soon as they get through that little Super 2 thing, they might give him a call this year, and I think he could be a really solid mid-rotation guy. And then, of course, we always have to talk about Ohtani, who's lurking over there, and I'm sure if the Yankees can get him, they would.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, real quickly to talk about Ohtani. Well, let's not talk about Ohtani yet, because I think he's going to fall into the greater plot of our episode today, which is going to be a it's a little bit of a pre-offseason preview. We're starting to get into the first few moves of the offseason now that the World Series are over, but it's a really interesting offseason, even for a guy like me who, you know, is forced to find the offseason interesting because he's got to write about all the transactions coming up. This looks like a really exciting and fun offseason, so I just want you and I to talk a little bit about some of the storylines, some of the players, some of the teams that we might find most interesting this offseason. And I would be happy to lead things off with Shohei Ohtani, who looks like he could possibly be coming to the U.S. to pitch, despite the fact that he will be giving up millions and millions and a huge amount of money to do so compared to if he were to stick around until he was 25 and enter the market as a 25-year-old. Now, this isn't a sure thing. It isn't a done deal. But Ohtani is probably the best pitcher in NPB, in the Japanese league. He might be the best hitter in the Japanese league, so he's a really interesting potential two-way player, although he's definitely more so a pitcher to major league teams with his ability to dial it up to almost 100 miles an hour and his multiple pitches. But he's not going to be the type of player that teams are going to be able to go out and spend $100 million to go and get because of the way the international amateur rules work in MLB at this point. So let's talk a little bit about Ohtani. Do you think that he's going to be a top-level player in the majors as either a pitcher or a hitter?
Yeah, I mean, you know about as well as me with this. Like, we're not professional scouts that haven't spent that much time in watching him, but he looks like the real deal, absolutely, on both sides of the ball. Barring something unforeseen, I don't see why he can't be top-of-the-rotation starter, a decent hitter maybe. I mean, obviously, he's a little bit lesser of a hitter than a pitcher. I think it's really interesting to see how that's going to play out. It sounds like his priority is that he wants to be able to find a team that's going to allow him to pitch and hit on a regular basis, which leads me to believe that that pretty much narrows it down to mostly American League teams, because he's going to DH when he's not pitching, and obviously the National League does not have a DH. So it's interesting. Obviously, there's teams like the Dodgers and I guess the Cubs and just big deep-pocketed teams like that who are going to want Ohtani, and I'm not sure if they're going to be able to make that play for him. So, yeah, that's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, and so most teams are going to be limited to whatever their international bonus pool is in terms of a total contract to get him to sign, and then he's signed to a minor league deal just like, you know, excuse me, any other minor league free agent who might be coming from the Dominican or Venezuela or something like that. Like you're saying, it seems like his priority is to play in the big leagues and to play on a team where he would have at least the opportunity to hit somewhat regularly. There is the idea that he would want a DH. I could maybe see a team that was in like tanking mode. Like, I kind of love the idea of the Marlins reaching out to him and saying, hey, you know what? We're so desperate for young, good talent. We'll give you the starting left field job and we'll let you pitch. And, you know, that way you can get what you want, just a kind of desperation move to get a talent like him into their system. But I agree with you. I think he's going to end up on some American League team that at least gives him, I don't know, the chance to be a DH on some days that he's not pitching. I do kind of wonder, that probably eliminates the Yankees if that's really a priority, right? Because I don't see the Yankees as a team that's really got a big hole at DH with, you know, Sanchez is obviously going to get some reps at DH, and they do seem like they're kind of loaded in the outfield, so the team has often used the DH spot as kind of a revolving door for some of the older players on the team. Do you still see them as kind of an option, or do you see another team as more a more likely front runner if that's the case?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point to bring up, but I think when you look at the guys that would be rotating through, probably guys like Tyler Austin, for instance, or maybe Greg Bird, Chase Headley, stuff like that, and then maybe Todd Frazier if he were to return. I think those are all solid players, but I don't think they would really impede the Yankees. I don't think they would be the reason that the Yankees don't try to pursue Ohtani.
Okay.
Maybe in his mind, he's going to be a little bit hesitant just given the depth that they have. But I don't think that's something that the Yankees would really think twice about given the level of talent he has. That's like, for example, the Rockies drafting Brendan Rodgers when they had Tulo. I mean, it's Rodgers. So,
yeah.
It's a long term acquisition there. So I don't think they would be too worried about that.
So what are some other teams that you think would be a good fit for Ohtani? I mean, obviously, since he's inexpensive and he's awesome, he's a fit for basically all 30 teams. But I've heard the Rangers as a team that was very, very interested in Ohtani, and that they've gone out and tried to acquire more international bonus pool money as a hope that they could offer him more than any other team. And it does seem like that would be a reasonable fit. Texas has a great relationship with Yu Darvish after he came in from NPB. They've brought in a number of players like Tony Barnett and others from NPB in the past. So they've already got a good relationship, and they've worked with players coming over from Japan in the past. They also seem like a team that could very easily slot him in as a part-time DH and, you know, kind of not have to worry about that. And they desperately need a frontline starter with Darvish gone. So the Rangers sound like an option. Most any other team with money in the American League seems like an option. Do you have any, like, educated guesses as where you think would be a best fit for him, or teams that we should be on the lookout for?
I mean, I think when you're talking about these guys, you always have to list off the favorites, like the Dodgers or the Red Sox or the Cubs. But I think if I had to really pick a favorite outside of just talking about the teams that are always playing for these kind of guys, especially since there is that international bonus limit, I think that opens up room for maybe a team like the Rangers, who do have a history with him, with John Daniels, with a lot. He has a lot of work in Japan. So probably, like you mentioned him, and that's also a good fit. I also do like maybe the idea of the Mariners, perhaps. They need him. And they've also had guys like Ichiro or Sashi Iwakuma who have joined them. So I think that definitely helps their play as well. And then I don't know how the Dodgers would fit in exactly, just because they are in the NL. But, I mean, I think that's a team that you always have to mention, because they're always going to be trying to get that big international player, as in the past.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. So, you know, the teams that have already had a lot of success going into Japan and pulling talent out, the Dodgers, the Mariners, the Rangers, the Yankees, the Red Sox, those are all teams that have had luck scouting and working with teams in the NPB in the past. So he's going to be really interesting. I'm not sure, like, when I do my free agent 50 list, Ohtani's going to be the number one guy on it because of the combination of his cost and his potential. He is kind of an open question, but he certainly has the potential to be a star in the league and a very rare two-way player. So he's number one on my list. What are the kind of the top most interesting free agents to you? Give me a name or two about guys you're really going to be interested in following and seeing what they do or where they end up going this offseason.
Yeah, I think one of the most I think interesting guys to me might be, I don't think he's one of the best, but Eric Hosmer. I think to see what he does is going to be really interesting. I've been struggling for the past couple of years. Is he a good bad player or a bad good player? I'm still not sure, to be honest. It's hard to not, like, if you take defense out of the equation, and it's pretty easy to do that when you're looking at an athletic first baseman. He certainly has the look of a really good player. He's had a couple of seasons where he's had a really, really good offensive output, a couple duds, of course, and when you combine that with a bad defense at first, it can give you pretty disappointing WAR totals. But it's a guy that every team can see is naturally talented. He's still only 28, and he's an athletic guy that could keep hitting pretty well in the future. So I think when you look at that, you can see a team easily ponying up to give him $100 million-plus in the free agent market. At the same time, in the past 2 years, he's had two seasons where he's had no WAR or less, according to some metrics. So you really have to balance that kind of risk and reward, especially as a first baseman, considering first basemen are pretty good at being terrible investments on the free agent market.
Yeah, the thing about Hosmer that I probably like the most is, aside from 2015 and his rookie season, or 2014 and his rookie season, he's played over 150 games each season. Last year, he played every game for the Royals. The 2 years before that, he played 158. So there are a lot of teams that could probably get a lot of value out of him Yeah, just in like the certainty that he's pretty likely to stand at first base for the entire season, as opposed to, some other investments you can make of guys who have been injured multiple times before. Last year he seemed to have a little bit of a mini breakout, but I think a lot of that was fueled by a higher batting average than usual. Yeah, his power ticked up maybe a touch, but it did seem like he was more able to kind of engage on that, plus hit tool that made him a really high-end prospect. When he was first coming into the league, he looked like the type of guy who had like the potential to be like one of those 60 to 70 hit, 60 to 70 power, prototypical first baseman. He hadn't hit quite that well up until the season, and you could probably argue he didn't even quite hit that well this season. I mean, he got pretty close to that 300, 400, 500 line you'd love to see. So yeah, I think Hosmer's a really fascinating guy. I expect the Royals have to be giving him a qualifying offer. So I've heard rumors about him maybe being a guy that's the Red Sox have interest in. But other than that, I'm kind of unsure as to where he ends up this season because, like you said, he's likely to be an expensive proposition for any team because, he's going to go into his age 28 season. He's got a track record of success. He's a World Series champion. But at the same time, maybe sabermetrically, he's not the type of elite hitting first baseman that normally draws a big contract. So, do you have any thoughts on what teams or what kinds of teams might be more aggressive in trying to go sign him in free agency?
Yeah, I know that's a really good question. I think the interesting thing is that teams are going to look at a guy like maybe Carlos Santana, who's going to get half as much at best as Eric Hosmer is going to be. And there's a really, really fair case to say that perhaps they like Carlos Santana more than Eric Hosmer, especially given the cost. So that's going to be just interesting to see how teams want to balance that. That being said, I think that really any team that needs a first baseman, if you're talking about maybe the Rockies, which would be fun. The Red Sox, the Cardinals, a team like that might be interested. I think he could go back really easily to the Royals. I'm not sure how much sense that would make for the team, given how many guys they're going to be losing this year. But he's just a natural fit there, especially since there isn't a perfect market for free agents, given that there's also a few other decent names on around. And you saw over the trade deadline how many first basemen were available and how little they returned,
Right.
which was interesting. Guys like Yonder Alonso, just really the interest was fairly minimal for the production they were producing. So that'll be interesting. It could become a little bit stagnant for a bit, even for a guy like Hosmer, who's fairly young and interesting. But I also do like the fact that even though there have been an extensive history of busts on the free agent market when it comes to first basemen, Hosmer doesn't really have that profile of the guy, the heavy swinger like Albert Pujols, for example, someone that really relies on their strength, and as soon as they get older, they're just going to fall apart. So that might help some teams justify taking him, even though he hasn't been really analytically what you want.
Right.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. I think if I had to guess a team, I might go the Red Sox, I think.
Really, so my thoughts right now kind of lean in a slightly different direction, same color, different league. I kind of like the idea of him staying in Missouri and going with the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals have the right spot open for him, and I think he certainly seems like a very Cardinals type of player. The question, of course, is whether or not they want to or can afford a player of his caliber to spend that kind of money, and they've got other holes they've got to fill as a team, so I'm not sure that's a sure thing or anything. I think it's pretty wide open right now, and I certainly agree that returning to the Royals is maybe the most likely option because he seems like out of the Royals free agents that they've got coming up this season, maybe the one that, first of all, they'd be most inclined to bring back, and second of all, the one that might be the hardest to replace out of the guys that they've already got. But the Red Sox are interesting to me because they're certainly in a win now mode. They certainly have the financial resources to go out and get pretty much whoever they want to. I get a little nervous about them after their signings of, guys like Sandoval and Ramirez haven't really worked out. I'm kind of hesitant to imagine that they would be willing to spend that kind of money on a guy like Hosmer, but then again, it's Dave Dombrowski. You never really know. So I think it would be really fun if he wound up going to the Red Sox. Boy, it seems kind of weird to me if that would be what works out.
Yeah, I mean, that's an example of them not quite learning from the past mistakes, but at the same time, Hosmer isn't quite a Sandoval or Ramirez in that, like, I guess you could say he just doesn't have that kind of power profile. I mean, Sandoval doesn't really either, but you see Hosmer as a guy that is a better bet to age well, and I think that might help them out a little bit, just his body type and all that compared to a guy like Sandoval.
Sure.
And he does have that great durability that Ramirez never really had. But I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right that, I mean, they've been burned by these kind of bets in the past. The good news is that they are one of the few teams in the league, them, the Yankees, the Dodgers, teams that can bet big in free agency, completely screw it up, and then do the same thing 2 years and be completely fine
Yeah.
with it. So they have that ability to bury that contract like they do with Sandoval and just keep on moving forward. So I think I would definitely want to keep that option open, especially because it is Dombrowski and they are trying to win everything. But yeah, I could also definitely see a team like the Cardinals being in play. That'd be
So,
interesting.
yeah, so let's talk a little bit about some of the other guys, because honestly, I think the Royals are one of my most interesting teams of the offseason. Because they have so much talent that's coming free and coming off the books this year, it's opening up their payroll, but it's also opening them up to being in kind of one of those positions where they can either turn around and be big time sellers and go into kind of a rebuilding mode, or they can be aggressive and they could possibly work to try to compete in the American League Central, which I gotta be honest, I don't really know if there's the Indians are fantastic. They're a team that should come into this season and be, easy favorites to win the division. But the Twins could be in a rising state. They could maybe are they could be kind of maxing out at like an 82 to 85 win team. So it's not outside the realm of possibility that the Royals could come in there and surge, and if they're really aggressive in this offseason, maybe put something together for a season that would put them in wild card contention, or maybe everything breaks wrong for the Indians and Corey Kluber has, falls apart or something like that, and maybe they could compete for the division title. But there's a lot of names going off this team. Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Lourenço Cain, and Alcides Escobar are all coming free in free agency.
And all-star Jason Vargas. Can't forget about him.
Jason
They're gonna lose
Vargas,
him.
I hate that guy so much.
The
not personally, just he was on the Mets for a hot minute and it made me crazy. And I've had arguments with people about his value in the past. But so with that all in mind, can't forget Jason Vargas. What do you think the Royals should do this offseason, and what do you think they will do this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, this really reminds me of the conversations that we all had at the trade deadline. It's the same exact example. They're fringe contenders. I think other than maybe the AL West, there's not that many divisions where the Royals could be possibly the second best team there. But I think the AL Central is one of those examples. We really don't know what we're going to get with the Twins, but we do know that the White Sox and Detroit Tigers are going to be pretty terrible, and the Indians are going to be probably the Indians. So they definitely do have that shot at the second wild card spot if they were to bring those guys back. And I think they had a great run. I don't think Dayton Moore is too keen on having to go through that 4 or 5 year rebuild again, because that was pretty brutal. And they did build all this talent themselves. And I can see, I mean, even though they are 80 and 82, they were 80 and 82, and they came a bit short of that wild card spot, in part because of a rough end of the season. I do see a scenario in which they can come back and maybe sneak into that playoff spot. I think it's more likely they do try to retain one of the glue guys like Hosmer, maybe a guy like that, maybe Kane, maybe not, a guy that can maybe be a bridge and let them not go quite as strong as they have the past couple of years, but keep a respectable team together that can kind of hang out. I like to say in like baseball purgatory and just hang out in the middle right there. And maybe in a season they can put together a little run. You never really know, but I think they'd at least like to remain in that spot where they can keep on drafting good talent, but they can also have that reasonable chance of sneaking into a spot in the postseason.
Yeah, I think that's kind of an interesting thought. To me, the least replaceable guy might be Hosmer, but it might also be Alcides Escobar. I know that the Royals have some, they have Raul Mondesi, but Escobar seems to be such a big part of not only the team's, kind of personality, but it's hard to find a good shortstop on the market these days. And what they could go after somebody like an Adeni Hechevarria. They could go after somebody like a Zach Cozart if they want to spend a lot of money, which if they did, they probably want to keep their own guys. I just, I'd be kind of surprised. I feel like he's the one that makes the most sense to return to the team. But again, he's like Alcides Escobar, so it's not like that move is going to be like, okay, now we're ready to compete. You know, we lost Moustakas and Kane, but we brought back Hosmer and Escobar, so we're good, I guess. You know, it's one of those things that I'm kind of unsure about. But I definitely see Kane as being the guy who's most likely to move on from that group. He, to me, seems like the one where the combination of the Royals have other talent in the outfield, plus he seems like the type of guy who could use a change of scenery, and there are a lot of teams that could use his combination of talents. I mean, he can play center field very well. He had something of a down season last year, so maybe he won't be as expensive as he might have been in the past when he was, like, you know, kind of a almost top three player in the league a couple of years ago. I kind of see him being the guy who finds another team and the Royals say, okay, we can bring the band back together, but somebody has to go. I think it would wind up being Kane.
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes sense to me. I think if you look at the free agents, I think he, maybe next to Hosmer, I think he might be their best guy that they'd be losing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's pretty hard to replace them, but at the same time, they do have that extra talent in the outfield. They don't have that same kind of talent up the middle of the infield. I mean, I guess they do, but no, I mean, there goes my point. But I think I can see what you're talking about. I think he doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would be as good of a pick to be that kind of that bridge between their last run and the next run. I think especially as a guy that has had some durability issues, has been a little bit up and down, even though he was excellent last year and in 2015. I think he does seem like the kind of guy that could pursue free agency and make a pretty good amount of money. Maybe not a guy that the Royals would be as easily able to afford and justify in the future, especially when you look at a guy like Alex Gordon, who they extended, which did not work out very well for them. Gordon's been pretty terrible, so they might be a little bit gun-shy from trying to re-sign a guy like Kane in the outfield.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I don't think anybody on any level expected Alex Gordon to have this kind of full collapse that he did this past year. I mean, that's about as weird of a collapse as I've ever seen, especially given Gordon's skill set. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't expect the guy who's an elite defender in a corner and, you know, a guy who's a good contact hitter with a little bit of power and good approach to all of a sudden be like a negative win player just like that. So, you know, you don't want to criticize the Royals, I think, too much for making that investment in Gordon, especially, you know, guy who's been in Kansas City since, like, I don't know, the Stone Age, basically. He's the one guy who's made it through the terrible process years. But at the same time, it's like they can't afford to make a mistake like you were talking about, like where the Dodgers can be like, sure, we'll sign Carl Crawford, we'll take on that contract, and, you know, oh, he can't play anymore, oh, that's fine, you know, we'll just send him home. The Royals do not have that possibility in their payroll, and I kind of think that if Dayton Moore was looking to do like a full rebuild or something, maybe he would have been more interested in moving on to take the, he was rumored to be in contention for the Braves job once John Coppola left. I think that if the Royals were looking to do a full rebuild, he might have been more interested in moving on and trying a different strategy rather than kind of like supervising a team like going down the tube. So I do kind of think they'll wind up trying to compete, whether that's going to be successful or not.
They didn't get rid of all their guys at the deadline. They hung on to them, and maybe that was because they thought they could contend last year. But I think that also goes to show that there might be that secondary reason for hanging on to them, that they might want to keep a couple of them going in the future.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so let's talk about some other guys or teams that you find interesting. Shoot me one or two ideas for guys you find especially interesting coming into the offseason.
I do think, just based on your comments before, I want to hear about Jason Vargas. I think he's the one of two AL All-Star pitchers that are going to be a free agent. So let's talk about All-Star Jason Vargas. I think I don't know. I have no idea what to make of that guy. So I'll let you do the talking right now.
I mean, on Vargas' side, he's always the type of guy that I thought really required a pitcher's park in order to be successful. And this year he proved that, no, he is not a fundamentally different pitcher than he was in the past. But what he was in the past is a guy who was, at least up until 2015 and 2016, he was a guy who was capable of throwing 190 to 200 innings from the left side. He was able to more or less keep the ball under control, and he couldn't strike anybody out. And yes, he's a fly ball pitcher, but he had a tendency to put himself, or teams had a tendency to put him in positions where home runs weren't going to hurt him so much. So Kansas City is a good fit for him. Seattle was a good fit for him. In some ways, Los Angeles was an okay fit for him. So he seems like, if it were me and I were a team coming into this offseason, I might keep my expectations a bit lower than I had in the past, because now he's had this history of injury in 2015, 2016. Whereas before that, you know, signing him to the extension that the Royals did, I think was probably smart in hindsight because he had been durable. Injury predicts injury, so now I don't feel as comfortable with that. But for a team that's looking to solidify the back end of a rotation, I think he'd be a very nice fit. The other thing that I'll say is that for a team that has no pitching whatsoever, so like the Royals or the Marlins or some of these other teams that are really, you know, bullpen heavy but could use a stabilizing force in the rotation.
Like, he feels like an Orioles player to me, in the worst way possible.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. He is definitely an Orioles type of pitcher, and the Orioles need pitchers. Now, you could argue that the Orioles need not Orioles type pitchers, but he does certainly fit that mold. I could see him landing with any number of teams, the same way I could see Jeremy Hellickson landing with any number of teams. I think because he can throw 180 innings, he's going to end up getting $15 million a year, something like that, on a three-year deal or something, you know, kind of similar to that. But I wouldn't be surprised if he landed with almost, you know, 20 different teams. They're not going to sign him in Colorado if they're smart. They're not going to sign him in other, you know, super, super hitters parks, I would think. But he's the type of guy that literally every team probably has some interest in. And I think his price point is going to be lower than some of the top end pitchers, but not so low that he's, the need for so many teams to have starting pitchers is probably going to drive his price up a little bit. And he'll just slot in basically wherever. I don't know. It's really tough to imagine what this pitching market's going to look like on a kind of a broader scale, I feel like, this year, because pitching is so weird.
Yeah, and here's a fun question. I've seen that the Royals were debating whether to offer a qualifying offer. I think that would be a pretty terrible decision. Mm-hmm. But given that they're just trying to collect as many picks as possible, if that were to happen, what are the odds that he's getting paid $15, $16 million next year for a qualifying offer?
Well, I think the qualifying offer is like, it's even more than that now.
Is it 17 now?
It's 17 and change, I think. Oof. And if you're the Royals, that seems like the worst possible option. There are plenty of teams that I think would be fine with getting Jason Vargas on 1 year and $17 million, depending on where they are in the win curve. But the Royals don't have enough payroll. If they get qualifying offer Jason Vargas and he accepts it, then I would have to say they are definitely saying goodbye to two, three, or four of those other position players that they want to keep. They're not going to be able to keep Hosmer and Moustakas and Kane if they're paying Vargas $17 million. And the qualifying offer system, you're not getting first-round picks anymore for these types of guys. So I don't really see that making a lot of sense for this team. So I don't see him getting a qualifying offer. I think that would have been kind of a crazy move, but you know, teams have made kind of crazy qualifying offers in the past. I don't think it would really hurt them that much if they offered the qualifying offer. I don't think teams are going to be like, well, can't sign this guy the way they have in the past with some other players who have been given the qualifying offer. But yeah, I just would be really weird if the Royals did that.
I mean, you also have to remember that they decided to give Ian Kennedy that $100 million deal a couple years ago. So now he's getting about $16 million all the way through 2020, and he had a solid 5.30 ERA last season, with about two home runs per nine. So they got him, and they also have Danny Duffy on the boat. So yeah, I mean, I can't imagine them doing a qualifying offer. They did say that they're considering it, which, I mean, it's the Royals. I have no idea. I mean, that wouldn't make much sense to me, but
yeah,
I think they're smarter than that.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, he's an interesting guy. Another team that I find absolutely fascinating this offseason is the Cubs, because they're set up for success, right? They're a good team. They're a great team at times. They're coming off the 2016 World Series. They've got loads of young positional talent. But now we're starting to see some cracks in the foundation, and you know this team is not going to have Jake Arrieta next year. Well, they're likely not going to have Jake Arrieta next year. He's a free agent. It seems like it would be a weird fit to bring him back, but the team is in need of starting pitching help. They've got a lot of parts that don't seem to fit real well in the positional realm. Like, you've got Kyle Schwarber, who is maybe not a great fit for this team. You've got Ian Happ, who I don't know went missing during the playoffs, even though we had a great rookie season this year. For a team that has so much positional flexibility, it's very strange that they don't seem to have the roster right now that, you can see where all of these like little pieces kind of like fit into place real neatly. They seem to have a couple of guys who we don't really know where they're going to go. You've got Almora and Schwarber and Hayward in the outfield and maybe Happ. You've got Zobrist now, who seems to be on the downside of his career and a rather expensive kind of utility player for this team. So I'm kind of interested in getting your thoughts on what the Cubs should try to do this offseason.
Yeah, I think just given the sheer amount of talent, but no apparent place for some of these guys, I do think maybe a trade for trading Kyle Schwarber or somewhere else, especially since he doesn't really seem like the kind of guy that should be starting in left field for the Cubs. I think that would make sense. I think as it stands right now, they have a strong three in Lester, Hendricks, and Quintana.
Yeah.
After that, it's pretty much completely up in the air, actually. And same with their bullpen, I'd say, now that Davis is leaving. So I think this is a team that's going to have to be, no matter what, they're going to have to be very active this offseason. And whether it's to build up or to sell parts or do both at the same time, it'll be odd. I mean, I think they're a team that I could see going after Yu Darvish, even though they might be a little bit gun shy now that he was terrible. I mean, I don't like really valuing guys based on how they do in the postseason, but Darvish was really bad in the World Series, and I think that's going to have to be. For a team that's looking to be in the World Series next year, I think that's going to have to be an amount of consideration. But he's definitely someone like him. He would be a player that could help them get to that spot at the very least. So I could see them making a play on Darvish. I think Arrieta is probably out of town now. I don't see him coming back. But and then there's also a guy like Wade Davis who maybe they want to hang on to. I know they like C.J. Edwards a lot, or I'm sorry, Carl Edwards. I know they like him a lot. But after that, they don't have the deepest of bullpens. I don't think there's a clear number one guy out there that could be pitching in the eighth or ninth inning for them. So.
I honestly think that this is probably the time for them to move on from Schwarber. I know it sounds weird to say that when he had kind of a down season last year, but he's the guy that seems to be the sticking point on this team in that he's got this power, he's got this natural hitting ability, he's a great clubhouse guy for this team, but he really seems to throw off a little bit of their versatility. In terms of, I think the team would be better off with somebody who could play more regularly in a different position other than left field and not be horrible when he does play there. The team seems to have moved on from him as any sort of catcher, which, the Cubs know a lot more than I do, but I'd be trying to run him out behind the plate at least once a week or something like that to kind of hide his defensive deficiencies. But I understand valuing the defense behind the plate and wanting to go in a different direction. He just seems to me, like they've been saying for years, he's an AL type of player. Some team in the AL should be willing to give up one of these kinds of pieces, what I would say pitching piece that the team needs, whether it's a, potential lights out reliever or a guy who could slot into the starting rotation. I think he's one of the few trade assets that they have that would actually bring back one of the pieces that they really need, kind of in the same way they used Jorge Soler to bring back Wade Davis last year. And I mean, honestly, I think he's more valuable than Soler was, so that's probably the move I would make if I were them. But then I look at how little they were interested in playing Ian Happ last offseason, and he's a guy that you'd kind of be selling high on, I think. So I'm wondering if he might be the guy that the team wants to move on from more, because they do seem very tied to Schwarber and for good reason.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at that, you always want to be trying to sell high, not sell low, of course. And Schwarber did have a really strong second half. I think he had a 129 WRC plus. I don't know if that's going to be really worth a defensive handcuff that he brings, that he really ties them down on one position, and he's really not that good in that one position either. So, I mean, it's kind of that balance that you have to find, especially since they do have some other pretty good hitters in that lineup. But I think just logically speaking, that they've really been hesitant to trade Schwarber. I think it would make more sense to go in the direction of getting rid of Ian Happ, who's an excellent player, but I don't know. It doesn't seem like they don't have that same level of trust. I think they are perfectly comfortable giving Schwarber a spot in that lineup every single day. I think they see Happ as maybe a little bit more of a tweener. And I don't know if that's really the right way to look at it, but I mean, I think that that's the way that they do look at it. And so, yeah, I mean, I think I would be surprised if both of them are on this team on opening day. I think that they really have so many needs elsewhere, and they have that kind of depth in the outfield and in the infield that they can afford to get rid of one of those guys. If I had to guess, I'd probably guess it would be Happ.
Yeah, I mean that makes the most sense. The only other option is really if they felt comfortable playing Happ at second base regularly or splitting some time with Zobrist there, I guess they could move on from Javi Baez, but that doesn't seem like a move the team would make either.
Yeah, they seem to be, they're like biased.
Yeah,
Whatever.
and that's great. He's not the player we thought he would be when he was a top prospect, but that's okay. He's a lot of fun to watch. So yeah, the Cubs have a lot of. I think everybody kind of agrees though that they've got to go out and get some sort of one or maybe two starting pitchers. And I think everybody kind of thinks like, oh, they'll go out and they'll sign one of the big pitching free agents, whether it's like an Alex Cobb or whether they go all the way to Darvish or something like that. But I kind of look at it and I think like, well, they probably need to get two. I don't know if they really need to get two, but they seem like the. That would be the safe thing to do, especially considering how often pitchers get injured at this point. And I think they really are looking to be a 100-win team next year. So I wonder if they will have to go out and trade somebody in order to get one. But whether it's one of these guys or something from their farm system, I don't know.
And I think an interesting fit. I really like an interesting guy on the market, at least Lance Lynn. I really like him, and I think he could be underpaid even this year. And I think he would be not a terrible fit. And he doesn't have that great control, but he's always been productive, and he was very good this year coming back from Tommy John. I think someone like him, or like a guy like Alex Cobb that you mentioned, maybe someone that won't cost as much as Darvish but can still be a decent pitcher, would be a good fit for them. Because yeah, I mean, right now they have three guys in their rotation, and that's it. And they don't have a ton of high minus pitching depth right now. So I mean, it's gonna be a trade or a free agent signing.
Yeah, and Lance Lynn is a great name to have brought up because he's one of those guys that I think was completely ignored for most of the season, partially
And the
because
trade
the
deadline.
yeah, and at the trade deadline. I think part of that has to do with the fact that the Cardinals last year were boring and people are kind of over the Cardinals at this point, I think is worth saying. We've had the Cardinals shoved down our throats as such a great team for so long, and now they've kind of slinked back into this like not a lot of superstars and just generally consistently good, and people are kind of bored with that kind of mode. And the Cardinals to me seem like another team that's like really kind of stuck in the middle, like at a higher level than the Royals. I think their ceiling is a little bit higher, their floor is a little bit higher than the Royals, but they're definitely a team that could go one of two ways sort of mode. I think for sure they're going to try to succeed rather than rebuild. But yeah, Lynn is fascinating because I talked about Vargas being a good fit for pretty much, 20 out of 30 teams. Like, name a team that Lance Lynn is not a great fit for. I don't think there is one. I seriously think that any team could go in and sign him for 15 million a season, 17 million a season, even 20 million a season, and be like, oh, I think we got a good deal here. I think he's going to work well for us.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's the kind of player that no team is going to be outpriced. Every single team is going to be able to afford him, I think. And every single team has a good reason to want him. I mean, he's not going to be an ace, but he's a guy who's like 6'5", 300 pounds. He's going to be able to be durable as long as his elbow holds up, take the ball every fifth day, and provide really quality innings. I mean, maybe he falls off a cliff eventually with those walks. But honestly, if you put him in a decent ballpark with a decent catcher and a decent defense behind him, I could see him being a really, really solid starter. You don't see that many. I think that everyone says there's all these mid-rotation starters. I don't think there's that many actual mid-rotation starters. I think it's pretty hard to find that balance between the guy that you want to pay $200 million and the guy who's not that special. I think Lance Lynn's one of those guys, though, that's really in between and really in a good way. One of those guys that is going to provide you quality innings, but he isn't going to break the bank. So I think he's a great fit anywhere. Unless some team decides to give him some ridiculous deal, it's hard not to be satisfied with signing a guy like that.
Yeah. And I mean, there, you know, it only takes one team, of course. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if, like, oh, the Orioles went out and they spent $22 million a year for him. And then it's like, well, maybe now it looks like that might be a little bit of an overpay, or you get a little risky there. But yeah, I think his agent would have to be super busy this season. I wonder if the Cardinals after the season are going to be like, huh, we might have screwed this one up a little bit. But you know, the Cardinals always have another starting pitcher who's going to do great and do a 3.5 ERA.
Always. Yeah.
All right. So yeah. Any last guys you want to touch on, or teams you want to touch on, or stories you want to touch on before we call it a show?
I don't have any other. The one guy that I do think is interesting is JD Martinez, just because he's just a ridiculous hitter. He's so good. Mm-hmm. And I think he hasn't really been valued like that. I mean, the return that he got at the deadline was kind of ridiculous. I mean, I don't know if you were part of this, but at BP when we did the trade game.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the offers that came in were a million times better. I mean, I was as the Astros. I don't remember exactly who I offered, but I promise you, it was pretty good. And he ended up getting two guys that weren't even top 100 guys from Diamondbacks. And then he ended up hitting like 29 home runs in 62 games or something like that. So I think he's a team that might not fit in everywhere, especially given that his defense isn't awesome and he's going to cost a ton of money. But I think he's a huge difference maker.
Yeah, I think he's been a lot of fun. He's been, obviously, like you said, he was a huge difference maker for the Diamondbacks specifically. I think for that reason, they might be super interested in trying to keep him around, which is kind of weird because he doesn't seem to fit like perfectly on that team because of his defensive issues, and because this is a team that already has what I would consider a pretty good offensive floor and ceiling with guys like, you know, Peralta and Goldschmidt and Pollock and stuff like that. So I don't know where he ends up going. He's very confusing to me as to where he'll end up going. I definitely think that it would be an American League team would be the best fit for him, where, you know, you could play him in left field, but then you could also put him at DH in case you wanted to, you know, support your pitching staff a little bit. I don't know. Where do you think he might end up?
I don't know. I mean, I think he might be able to speak a little bit for the Red Sox, who, again, the kind of like Hosmer, they've been burned by that kind of guy, but they could also use that kind of pop, and he would be pretty insane in Boston. But I also think that he could be a fit. I do like the Diamondbacks as a fit. I think when you look at their actual team and their salaries, they're not exactly a rich team, but they're paying Zach Greinke, and then they got Tomas and Goldschmidt, and then after that, they don't actually have like a real contract. They all got other guys. So I mean, it's pretty cool actually. But I think he's not a perfect fit, but he could go there. I think he made more sense at the trade deadline as a guy that's like, he's not an ideal fit for us, but if you're going to pay that little for him, give that little of a prospects back, that why not? I don't think he's a why not guy anymore, because he is going to be asking for easily $20 million plus on the free agent market. But I think he was so good for the Diamondbacks, and he really did carry them for the second half, that I could see them making a run at him, especially given they don't really have that many guys on the hook in the future.
Yeah, it could definitely be sticking around there. I don't know. He's one of those guys where I definitely feel like some team is going to overpay for him. I think that's going to be one of those contracts where it's going to be, you know, 5 years and 20 to 25 million per season. And he is a great hitter, and I don't think there's any question that he provides power to a team, but, you know, he's one injury away from being like a really ugly back end of that contract. And I'm not saying that's not even worth it for some of these teams, especially ones who really need that kind of skill set, but I definitely think like he is one of those more high risk, high reward type of guys, because even as good as he was last year, he didn't really top out over 4 wins by BP's WARP metric, even though he provided all that lumber in Arizona. So it'll be interesting to see how things go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think there's always that. There's that kind of player that, you know, when you're paying for him, that you know those last couple of years aren't going to be good. You just know that's going to happen. But you also know that the first couple of years are going to be really good. So I think he's one of those players that, for a team that's especially trying to win now, that their window is right here – I think he's a really, really good fit. And that's why I brought up the Red Sox, for example, a team that's trying, as we talked about, they're trying to win it all right now, and they can probably afford to see a little bit of an ugly back end of that contract.
Well, that'll about do it for our show today. Ben, thanks so much for joining me on the show today. We've broken down a little bit of the offseason. I'm sure you and I are going to be breaking down a whole lot more as the rest of the year goes on.
Oh, yeah.
it's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. And we'll definitely have you back on the show to talk a little bit more when we get through a little bit more of the offseason. So thanks for joining.
Perfect. Yeah, no, thanks. I really appreciate it.
So if you're interested in following us, we are DFA Podcast on Twitter. We are DFA at baseballprospectus.com. If you're looking for, shoot us an email or some information about the show. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can find us on Stitcher. We'd love for you to come in and rate and review the show. But until next time, I'm Brian Grossnick, and thanks so much for listening.